Good morning. Welcome to Digging the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldin, and my guest this week is Fred Johnson, Farmer Fred from Nacelle. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
So today we're going to talk about what you're growing, what you're going to be growing, and food localization. No, that's not
localizing our food system.
Thank you. Thank you. So let's start with
what we got going in the
garden.
Yeah,
tell me what's going in the garden, what's in the greenhouses, the hoop houses, and what's in your beds.
Well, we start the year off with the greens production. It's the first crops we can get. So arugula, spinach, mm-hmm. early season crops, they can take those sometime frosts.
And we had one a week ago.
We did have one. And everything survived pretty dang well. We were definitely shuffling the tomato plants around a lot because we can't let those get less than 50 degrees. It's hard on them. But with production right now, we're doing a lot of greens. And transitioning, we're moving our – we start the greenhouses in greens for our earliest season crops. And then once we start getting temperatures up, then we start transitioning the greens production to the outside beds and then starting to plant our first of the spring and summer crops, like our first green beans. We've got carrots and beets that are going to be ready for market probably within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Are those outside?
Those are the first carrot and beet beds are inside the greenhouses. Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of playing that the weather game on just being able to get those.
They get enough extra heat and enough protection from the winds and the driving rain that they can get a good start.
It's such a better spring this year that we're able to transition to the outside beds much more effectively. Mm-hmm. We had those spring rains last year that were just beating the soil.
And it was cold. The soil was cold.
Yeah. So we're having a lot more. We've got all our brassicas are outside. So we've got cabbages, kale, broccolis, cauliflowers that are already in the ground and doing pretty well. Some of them are a little, there's something they're missing that we haven't quite sourced what that is. But
maybe a couple more degrees.
Couple more degrees, or I've been so focused and all of us on the farm have been so focused with soil nutrition. Because that's proving to be such an important thing that but you can tell the stressors. You know, if you've got red in your leaves, the plants are stressing. They're needing something, either heat or water or
maybe a mineral that's
or nutrition.
Yeah.
And so it's an interesting one, but it's looking really phenomenal. The investments that we've been making into that dirt in the garden are just coming back, paying back big time. There's a fellow named Jim Karnowski out of Ilwaco that has just been a real asset on the farm of kind of guiding us and mentoring us about our soil nutrition.
Mm-hmm. So did you do that soil test and get the minerals that you need?
Yes. Yeah, Jim has got a business going where essentially he's analyzing a client's soil, and then he's doing the soil nutrition supplements that basically he's putting together a recipe of what the soil specifically needs. So if it's boron, copper, magnesium, yada, 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 that it's...
And he figures out exactly how much you need.
He does, and he's really much more... He's got the chemical background and the science background, like cation exchange. I'm still trying to wrap my head around cation exchange. And, man, he's just got it. He'd tell me about it, and then my head starts to blow up, and I have to go, you know, pitchfork some poop and regain my equilibrium.
Right.
But it's great. He's able to tell us about it in doses that we can handle.
Well, actually,
but the plants are sure seeing it.
Right. So if he gives you the formula, you put it in the soil, you incorporate it, and you plant.
Yeah.
If you see it, you're already seeing a difference.
Well, like last fall, that he went and analyzed both of my big greenhouses, my old greenhouse and my new greenhouse, and then he came up with a recipe of supplements. And he pretty much instructs us on how to, you know, to add it to the soil. You know, it's like cooking, really. And so then it has to go into the soil. And in a sense, the soil biota, the microorganisms of the soil, digest it and thus make it available to the plants. And so it's still a learning thing. I'm definitely not getting everything perfect. you know, but we're getting a lot better.
And you bring up a good point. You don't take a mix of all the soil from all the different parts of your garden, put it together, and then try to get a formula.
That's one thing we're noticing. You know, we're planting rows that are, you know, in excess of 100 feet long, and you may plant it with a single type of plant. Like, say we've got a 100-foot-long or 120-foot-long row of spinach.
Whoa.
But you see you can almost see the soil, you know, the health and vibrancy of the soil being written by the health of the spinach. It's kind of like the spinach is symptomatic of what the nutritional needs
through the length of the bed, there's different soils.
Yep. Yeah, well, that, and you just see different growth rates with spinach. You know, some places will have like a big bump in production, and other places it's struggling.
Uh-huh.
And so it's there's a lot of, you know, you can't super generalize it, you know, so mm-hmm. you do, he's got a very specific medium or means by which he does the soil sampling. And I've studied it, you know, and it's just patterns that you pull soil to try to get.
Oh, right, to get a good representation.
Exact.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of the TLC just from like our compost. We had been picking up the compost from the Blue Scorcher all this last year plus, and composting all their organic waste. And we've got some of the healthiest, most beautiful worm-infused compost. And so the plants are really liking that. They're just trying to work that into the soil.
Uh-huh. And so you couldn't get enough just from you guys on the farm?
You know, it's one of those things that it's kind of a symbiotic deal. We deliver to the Blue Scorcher. They've been very, very supportive, and they really like our freshness.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a customer base that really is appreciative of the freshness. And then we pick up the compost while we're there. So it's like we both deliver the produce, and then we pick up the produce that is going to be a waste product otherwise. Mm-hmm.
No, it's great. Why should they throw it away?
And they're all organic, so we have no issues with... we have to be really pretty selective sometimes about what we do compost. You know, with some of the horse manures. I'm very leery of horse manures now because they're feeding them GMO alfalfa, which it's like with that Roundup Ready alfalfa, that stuff is just hell on your compost bins. I don't know specifically what all is going on with it, but it's not good.
So right, it's funny. You think, oh, good, I've got a source of manure.
Yeah,
you know, because I have a friend who has a cow, a horse, or whatever. And right now we have to look at what are they feeding that animal?
Exactly,
because that's going to go in my garden, and that means that whatever they're feeding their animal, you get to eat.
You're going to be eating it. It's part of the food cycle.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's go back to what you've got going. So you have tomato plants. Do you have that silver room in your house with all the tomato plants?
We did. Well, that's where we started the babies out in the 72-count trays. But now I've got a new room out in the upper greenhouse, in the old converted barn greenhouse, that we've been able to use that. And just this week, we're starting to be able to leave them out overnight. We supplement, you know, we do, you know, with the 1,000-watt halides and the grow lights. But nothing compares to real sunlight, you know, the full-spectrum sunlight. So as soon as we can get those plants into real sunlight, they just start getting much healthier and happier. We get problems with legginess. You know, they want to get too tall, too fast, because they're just hungry for that light, you know.
No, but you don't mean actually outside. You mean like in the
greenhouse. Oh, in the greenhouse, on the garden tables. Mm-hmm. You know, so we've got, 1,500, 1,600 tomato plants out this year.
Wow. And
we're growing them for our use and then for doing sales. There's
been a number of folks that
have been very interested. We stick with all heirloom varieties. And honestly, it's like not that many people want to start a growing operation in the middle of February on their tomatoes and peppers and eggplants.
We started doing it every year. And it kind of takes over the kitchen.
It does.
I mean, and it's a mess. There's soil everywhere. And now we've got a lot of them are out in the greenhouse.
Yeah.
And that's way better. Although when they first went out, they all turned white. You know, they got burned.
Right at first.
And now they're all recovering.
You know, I was reading a very interesting article about that, of using actual shade cloth, because they can get so hot so quickly that they have nutritional deficits. You get blossom end rot from lack of calcium, because calcium can't move fast enough up the stems. I'm still researching it.
Yeah, we had that last year.
I'm gonna be investing in some shade cloth this year, and just to bring those temperatures down. You know, especially the smaller greenhouse that we can get. I have a thermometer in the very top, in the peak of the greenhouse, that it can register 100+.
Oh, easily
degrees, and that is not good. That's excessively hot for your plants.
Uh huh. So the range is.
Tomatoes like to top out at maybe 90 degrees. They like hot weather, but they don't like super hot weather. And this the whole thing with greenhouses, you're in intensifying all those, the sun and the heat. And so you've got to be careful with it, because again, it'll act as a stressor, and you know, you'll get it in the flavor. Your green beans will have just a bit of bitterness to them, and such, or something. And
or the tomato, no flavor?
The tomatoes have flavor, but I do struggle with just that blossom end rot. And it's not so much rot sometimes, but it's just sort of ugly.
Well, it's black.
Yeah.
It's black, it's flat, it's gross.
It's just, yeah, it's just
you
not
don't
a,
wanna
a
eat
it's
it.
Just not a super happy tomato. Yeah, you end up cutting that off.
Right.
You know, and so as we refine our tomato art out there, that, yeah.
Yeah, well, from year to year, you try to learn the varieties that taste the best, the varieties that grow the best.
Yeah.
And forget the ones that are crummy.
Yeah, and that's, I don't know, I still fall back on the heirlooms. I've not been disappointed. There's some that definitely like our area more than others.
So which are your favorites?
You know, there's a lot of the Russian stock on tomatoes. The Moscovics, I think Stupice is, Italian, but it's
Stupice is an awesome tomato.
But they're fantastic tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Our customers love them. They're they're just a great all-around tomato. So we're basically growing tomatoes. One of our clients on the beach has a wood-fired pizza oven. And so, like, say, with cherry tomatoes, usually they're more labor-intensive to harvest, but the flavor is just dynamite. So we're growing for these more specific markets. Mm-hmm. So we've got tomatoes that, you know, one slice will make a whole sandwich, all the way down to just tiny little bambinis. Mm-hmm.
So are you growing, like, Legend?
Not doing Legend. I think that's a territorial. It's Legend. I'm not that familiar with Legend.
Nichols developed it.
I'm pretty almost gone exclusive with Johnny's Seeds. I've just been really pleased with their seed performance.
Okay.
Not to be just hyping Johnny's, because that's not as local as territorial. But
name a couple more seeds, varieties. When people go to like a Sunday market and they see tomato plants, they, you know, if they buy something that's not, you know, not good for our climate.
Yeah. Well, with ours, now you're putting me on my spot. We've got about 10 different varieties, and I don't know if I can actually repeat all of them. We've got a gold nugget cherry. We've got the Amish paste again, that was a great Roma as a sauce tomato. The speckled Roman, well, also a Roma type tomato. The Big Beef, which has been a big seller.
It's called Big Beef?
Big Beef.
Interesting. I don't even know
that. We laid off the mortgage lifters. I was always entranced by mortgage lifting, because I've got quite the mortgage to lift there on the farm. And I was just like, oh, that'd be great. But they're so giant that they were kind of limiting our ability to people. It was too much tomato for a lot of folks. Or some of the restaurant clients. That and the rose. I mean, the rose was good, but we're not doing them this year. I just didn't have that intensity of flavor in that tomato. It was really big and really, you know, it was an impressive tomato. But, you know, it's like the most intense flavors of the tomatoes are the cherries. Those are the old grandmother vines, and that's, they've all been kind of hybridized from the cherry vines.
Are you doing any grafted tomatoes?
Not doing the grafted tomato. I knew you were going to ask me about that. And I it's one of those experiments that until I can really...
Well, we're going
to focus.
I've ordered two. They haven't arrived yet. They should be arriving soon. One is a Brandywine, and one is a Legend. And I don't think we have any Brandywine. We started from seed, so I can't compare one to one there. But we do have Legend that we started from seed, so we'll be able to compare the plants, and I'll do what they've done. And everyone that's selling them, they have the picture of the regular one and the grafted
one.
That's
in the territorial catalog, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I've seen it in other catalogs
as well. That's very impressive.
Right. Well, and I've also OSU, the Oregon State Extension Master Gardeners website has testimonials from Master Gardeners in Salem and Eugene, Corvallis, those areas that have experimented with them the last few years. And their stories and their pictures are amazing. They convinced me that we should try them.
Now, do they sell the plant? Is it already grafted then?
Yes, it's okay. Already grafted. Although I'm sure it's simple enough to do yourself, but, you know, I didn't want to deal with that. It's one more. Although Barry's been very successful with grafting apples and plums.
And they're charging, what, $10 for those?
Seven?
So you're going to recoup the cost on that really quickly if you're able to double production.
I would think so.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, of course, how much does this tomato seed cost?
Pennies. Yeah. But you still have to take into account all the labor issues and stuff, and that's what you're getting with those grafted tomatoes.
Assumably,
if you had some problems with the tomato, they'd give you a new tomato.
Oh, yeah. I got sweet potato plants, and they were all dead on arrival, and I still tried to plant them, and nothing happened. They just refunded me the money.
Did they?
Yeah, so I don't think there's a problem.
We don't even try sweet potatoes. That was I tried okra last year, it was dismal.
Didn't work?
Yeah, it just is not hot enough.
Oh, we should take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. We're back. You're listening to Digging the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with Farmer Fred Johnson from Nacelle, Washington. And we're talking about what's going on in the garden. Okay, so what's next? What are you going to plant? What's going to go in the garden?
It's getting warm enough now that we're starting to have to we'll be transitioning the greens from the greenhouses to, that'll be an outdoor crop for the remainder of the summer and into fall. And so that
you're not talking about digging the ones up you have there.
Planting. No, we harvest, then we compost and feed it to the rabbits or the compost bins. And so then we start to put our summer crops into the greenhouses. So that's really where we're all on tether hooks right now. If we've got a lot of tomatoes that they're going to either have to be repotted or need to get homes. And once we're able to get that consistent 50-degree low at night, which we're right on the edge of it, let's hope and pray we're right on the edge of it, that is, that's what really we struggled with a lot last year because it was just so cold for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get those going. The potatoes are coming in. My friend Chris, is going to be tilling a new potato field, so we're going to go for some 200-foot-long rows.
Wow. Oh, these are new beds lower field?
Yep. Yeah, we're transitioning some of that field out there. The elk don't like tomato or potatoes. They don't like the nightshades at all.
Nice.
And so we're...
Wait, can they get in there?
They can until I get the money to put together a good elk fence. But I'm giving myself about a 3-year window to get that.
You have a fence.
I've got a fence for our garden, but...
Oh, this is a bigger garden?
Yeah, we're putting in close to an acre of potatoes.
Wow.
People want potatoes. I mean, my restaurant customers really want the root vegetables. Sell very well, you know, and who can complain about a homegrown
fresh potato
carrot?
Oh, God, yeah.
And the potatoes, and it's, yeah. Sorry.
That is great. Okay, so, right. Someone called who said that the tomatoes that are bred for the Willamette Valley are not the same as... Duh, because it's a lot warmer there.
It's a lot warmer.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can do field planting in Willamette.
Well, you know, even people that are in Jewell or in Napa and in Swenson can grow tomatoes outside and have them get ripe.
Really?
Yes. Because it's about 10 degrees warmer.
Huh. Microclimate.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And, and also people on the south side of Astoria have at least a 5-degree head, and they can start earlier, and they can grow things that I can't grow on the north side.
Yep,
it's just the way it is. But okay, so let's move on to food, local
Localization.
Thank you. Localization.
Well, you know, I'm taking a business course this year, and it's been something that's really gotten my head much more opened up to like long range, more strategic planning. And I'm looking at really trying to focus on commonalities of with customers, with
other growers,
mm-hmm. with labor. You know, I've got a stellar group of young people on the farm this year that are bringing, it's just so inspiring to have their energies. And they're really earnestly wanting to learn about growing. And having them on the farm is just, it's really bringing to me to the understanding is like, this is not something that I'm going to succeed at singularly. You know, I'm not, that's such a sort of untruth. I mean, this idea of a single farmer, you know, out there running a whole farm. It's families and it's groups of people working cooperatively.
Well, you know, I think it's always been that way.
I think so.
I read a diary of a midwife from the 1700s in Maine, and she described, you know, she wrote in her diary every day, and, you know, they grew everything. Well, they didn't grow everything because their neighbor grew, you know, something complimentary. And, and when something needed to be harvested, everybody came over. When something needed to be, you know, some major project, everyone participated. The adult children, the teenage children, you know, everyone participated. So, yeah, nobody did it alone. You couldn't.
Well, I guess I had that illusion that that's what I was going to strike out and try to figure out how to do this. Mm-hmm. And I've largely done a lot of my adventures on my own, and this is one that's had me stymied in that I just don't have the resources, the time resources, the capital resources. And so I say with like the interns on the farm, or I'm farm partners really for the seasonal farm partners, and then our CSA supporters and our restaurant supporters, it's all those guys working together for these common interests and supporting the farm endeavors. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's what broaches me into the food system, of like feeling very strongly about working with, you know, localizing our food, mm-hmm. and localizing production. I had no concept how expensive farming was, you know, both labor-wise and material-wise, capital-wise. And just, I don't know. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, but that's part of the 5-year business plan, and mm-hmm. that I very much feel like we're succeeding on delivering a product to folks that's just hands down better. You know, that it really is a superior product. Mm-hmm. The freshness that we can deliver, Cecily Stewart is working. This year, we're taking her out of the garden so much, and she's working on deliveries. So she's delivering our products twice a week to all our restaurant customers and to our CSA customers. I mean, we have that availability of trying to just, we're putting that emphasis out there. Or, well, should I say she is. She mm-hmm. bought a van, and she's doing a really great job of liaisoning with our customers. I have proven very capable of dropping the ball a lot, getting too overextended. You know, and I really want to focus on the production side of the farm. Mm-hmm. I want to see the production, and I want to, you know, really focus on that and trying to deliver and such.
But, you know, that is another point. You know, people have a fantasy, a lot of people. I have a fantasy about having a farm. And I think the part that everyone thinks about is they're going to play in the dirt and they're going to plant some stuff and they're going to harvest some crops. And then what? You know, okay, now I have 10 times more than I need. Okay, now I'm going to sell it to my neighbor. Oh, great, they already have it. Okay, let's see, where am I going to go? You know, and like the distribution and the handling and, oh, crap, I have 500 zucchini. How am I going to process that?
Right.
Can I sell what I process? There are all these other parts to it.
Yeah, that's the thing, yeah. I mean, you can grow it, but if you can't viably sell it, then you're not in business very long.
Well, right.
It's
a hobby.
It's, yeah. Well, and that's where we need to figure out, I mean, collectively, how to take it beyond the hobby stage. And there's a lot of people working on this.
Mm-hmm. And so are you collaborating with other farms?
We're trying to. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like with Seth, she's been reaching out to a number of other farmers because she is making that delivery route. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, to me, it's like she's a service provider with, and I'm trying to figure out how I can pay her for this service to get that element of it off the ground and sustainable in essence. I mean, if you're not making money with it, you're not really sustainable.
Right. No, you're not. But the idea of having your food delivered goes way back to, I mean, when I was a kid, right, the milk truck came to our neighborhood and would leave the milk. And you'd have the egg delivery person. And they'd go from the farm to you. No middle grocery store.
Right.
Just directly. And this is going back to that, which means you're going to have much fresher. That, right, the farm comes directly to your house or your business.
Yeah.
What could be more delightful?
Well, and that's the thing that we can deliver on. I mean, the greens that we're selling right now are spinaches. We've gotten the dirt right. So the spinach is just fantastic. It's the best spinach, but we've got to get it fresh.
Right. Okay, so you were talking before we went on the air about how quickly the nutritional value of produce degrades.
Well, yeah, it's pretty alarming that, you know, when I'll go to the grocery and just to do price comparisons, and I look at, there's been a whole surge in lettuce products, salad products, like prepared salads, and, you know, when they market it as fresh, and, you know, it's just two whole different beasts. I mean, I don't think anything that's in the grocery shelves has been in a package for a week. You know, it's been in the pipelines for minimally a week to 10 days, which to me is kind of a lifeless corpse at that point. it's lost a lot of its vitality, and that living energy that really is what makes our food the sacred thing that it's meant to be. And so that's something that.
But
that
I would still rather have somebody eat that than eat something that's cooked and dead and highly processed.
Like a process, like a...
I mean, just pick, you know, a French fries, hamburger, whatever. You
right,
know,
right.
I mean,
processed
I'd rather have them, even if it's a mostly a lifeless corpse, it's at least...
Semi-lifeless.
It's, right, at least it's raw and it's, you know, right? It's got some enzymes, it's got some nutritional value, some. But they could do better.
Well, that's the thing I think with
we need to strive for better.
That's what people want. That's what they want to feed to their family.
They
want to
eat food that just knocks your mouth out. You know, it's wow, this is alive. I mean, heirloom tomato versus a store bought commercial picked green tomato.
Yeah,
they're a world apart, and everybody knows that. Same thing with apples. Same thing with greens.
Yep.
And once you taste the real living, oh God, broccoli.
Like the
fresh. Know, there's one variety that you can buy commercially, like 80% of all the broccoli is the same variety.
Yeah.
These other varieties that you can grow, you know, by buying the seeds.
Or, and the rob and such.
They're totally different. They taste fabulous.
They're living creatures.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that's, life begets life.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, right? If you want to feel better, eat more living food.
Eat more living food.
Yes, yeah.
And that's what our customers want. That's what our chefs want. That, I mean, their reputation is based on the quality of their produce. And I'm just very inspired by our customer base.
Yeah.
Because they're truly, it's not a trend. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say it's not a trend. It's not a fly-by-night fashion or anything. People are really wanting substantial changes in their food.
Oh, absolutely.
And those guys that are able to offer it are succeeding business-wise.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what people want. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Fred.
Absolutely. Oh, wow. It's gone.
I know.
That was a half an hour. That's crazy.
My guest has been Fred Johnson. He is a farmer in Nacelle. And if you want to get in touch with him to buy something or get on a CSA call.
Fred's homegrown produce.com.
Okay. You want to give your phone number?
Oh, 360-484-3345.
You're listening to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine. Talk to you in a week. Have a great one.